Hi, and welcome to Kaleido Science. You are listening to our winter special, where we are taking a look at science communication. During December, we'll have special episodes on Sundays, where we talk to fellow science communicators about their medium and experience. In January, we'll go back to our schedule and we will take a look at the research behind science communication. This episode is hosted by Imogen Hüsing and Elisa Palme. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's episode.
Hello and welcome. Today we have the great joy of talking to Dr. Nicolas Wöhr from the Center of Nanointegration, University Duisburg-Essen. Usually he works as a physicist, but today we want to talk to him about his science communication projects. He is one of the most successful German science communication podcasters, part of the podcast duo Methodisch Inkorrekt. But today we want to talk to him about his science communication on stage. He has done multiple projects in this direction. One of is the science show tour in the context of the podcast, but he also has many other experiences with bringing science to the stage, from lectures for children to collaborations with orchestras. Welcome.
Yeah, nice to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
And maybe for our non-native German speakers, the podcast name you just heard, so Methodisch Inkorrekt, would translate to methodological incorrect.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that was a clever move from us, I would say, because we started physics, and we probably have some idea of physics and we can explain physics. But in this podcast, we also wanted to talk about other science topics, like natural science, but even some fields that are far further out of our knowledge. And so we were a little bit cautious, and we choose this title wisely to make it clear that probably not everything is correct that we say, but we try to be as correct as possible. That's why we chose this title.
And all the episodes are in German, so...
That's true. Yeah, we are. Yeah, it's basically German. It's a German podcast. We are native speakers, German native speakers, and since it is more like two buddies are talking about science type of podcast, and we are joking around, we had the feeling that there is not much scripted, so we had the feeling that it's more natural, more. There is more flow when we speak in our native language.
Yeah, I see that. But before we go into a different science com direction today, I'm just going to stop us here. And as in our regular episodes, we will play a shorter version of our intro and get to know game, where I give you three instead of five sentence beginnings and ask you to finish them spontaneously. Mm-hmm. The first sentence is, as a kid, I always wanted to be.
Actually, a scientist. So my father was a geophysicist, and I had these role models, these science role models. And so, yeah, I can answer that I always wanted to be a scientist, actually.
Yes. Always also physics, or did you have a different discipline in mind at the beginning?
I think it was always physics, because I had some role models that were able to explain me the world and the cosmos, and that always fascinated me. So I think I was pretty clear. There was this one day in, I don't know, sixth, seventh grade, where the teacher asked us what we want to become at one point. And I mean... sixth or seventh grade in the Ruhr area of our country, the boys are answering they want to play soccer, professional soccer, and the girls, I don't remember. And there was this one kid, me, answering he wants to be the physicist. That was, I was strange at that point, I guess, but I made it.
Yeah. Our second sentence. Currently, I'm most fascinated by...
Probably videography. So I always had the hobby to take pictures, And I was always fascinated by videos, so science explanation videos, but even vlogs or something like that. And I'm deeply, so we all consume a lot of YouTube, I would say, but we never, or I never thought about how much work goes into it. Like the using the cameras, operating the cameras, choosing the shots, cutting the videos, choosing the right music, writing a script. This is deeply fascinating how complex this task is compared, for example, to science podcasting, where you just start the recording. Okay, you have read an article that you explain, but it is something different. So videography is something where I'm deeply impressed right now how that works.
Yeah. During COVID, one of the favorite assignments of our professors at university was to tell us to do like 5-minute science videos, animated videos.
Wow.
And for me, it was super fun, but I think those were the classes that I spent the most time during university on the assignments, because one of these 5-minute videos took, I don't know, 20 hours, 30 hours.
Yeah, easily, because it's so complex, especially when you say you want to break it down in 5 minutes or even shorter, right? Video formats go down to 2 minutes is sometimes too long. So to be really precise, but still tell a story, be catchy, this is extremely challenging to do that in 2 minutes. And people succeed in doing that. And I'm deeply fascinated by it.
Yeah. I think that was one of the reasons why I preferred mainly doing podcasts over mainly doing short videos, just because the amount of work for the amount of content you can get out and the amount of information you can transfer is just such a different relationship to each other. It's,
That's an interesting point. We're coming later. We discuss science on stage. And there was a similar thing. I started with Science Slams, 10-minute shorts. And now we are doing a full evening of science on stage. And there was also something like these 10 minutes were too short for me at one point. And I enjoyed a little more the freedom of having two hours on stage. But we're coming to that later.
Okay. And our last sentence is, if I was an emoji, I would be.
Ooh, I think right now at the state of the world, I would be the facepalm emoji. There are simply too many situations where I could constantly facepalm myself. So facepalm all the way.
So it's more a self-directing emoji, not an other-directing emoji in the way you use it at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. To express my feelings. That's really important to learn.
Okay, now to get into the main part, maybe we can start with a kind of transitional question. What is the format of science you consume the most outside of your own research? Like apart from what you read, watch for your own research?
For my own research or
outside my research.
That's a good question. I guess since I said videography is something that fascinates me, I'm really into videos, YouTube videos, the classical Veritasium, for example, that I really enjoy, but other channels too. Not so much science podcasts, because I always fear that if I listen to some of the other excellent podcasts that are out there, that I start copying them or be spoiled by topics that they had, and I cannot speak about that anymore because I already heard it. I would say videos probably the most, but also blogs, of course, or science news, for example, to have a fast overview about different fields. Because, of course, in my job, I'm reading a lot of papers that are dealing with physics or my specific field in physics. And then I enjoy reading, for example, Spektrum der Wissenschaft, which is a German magazine dealing with science in a broader fashion that I really enjoy.
And can you tell us a bit about science communication on stage, coming from the science you consume to one of the mediums you, not quite medium, but one of the ways you communicate science?
I would actually say that my passion for science communication started on stages. It was not the case that we started doing the podcast, which is now like we are nearing 400 episodes. So this is something that we do for years, I guess 12 years or so. But I guess the passion really started with being on stage. And being on stage was, of course, in the beginning really, really small. It was this typical university had the open days of science or open lab days. And people ask if there's anybody who can show his or her lab or do a short presentation. And this is something that we started, I started, but actually Reinhard, which is the co-host of Methodisch Inkorrekt, he was at the same institute. And so we quite early started to do these kind of things together. Most of the time it was shows for kids, but they were a great audience. They are really critical, but they are also very enthusiastic. So when we did experiment shows, that was a good way to start things off. Yeah, that was the beginning, I would say. And then we had the feeling we would like to do that more often. And then back in the days, like it is 15 years ago, I guess, Science Slam started to spread, which is 10 minutes PhD students presenting their topic, basically. And after that, it's some kind of competition. After 5-6 people are presenting, there is some kind of evaluation who won the Science Slam. And we did that for quite some time. Reinhard, my co-host at Methodisch Inkorrekt, even got the German champion of Science Slam at one point. But then we realized, okay, it's nice to have this 10 minutes, but you always talk about the same science, always about the topic of your PhD. Would be great to have more time to explain things in a broader, longer fashion. And then we started the podcast. But we already had this gene, or we always wanted to be on stage, because it's really something special if you have this contact to the people, to the audience. It's completely different when you're recording a podcast. You are just Reinhard and me talking, and although we know that people are listening to us and we get a lot of feedback by mail, there is no direct feedback, and that changes when you're on stage. You suddenly realize people are laughing, people are surprised to hear something. And there is a special thing about these live situations. And so at one point we said, okay, we know how to do a podcast. We love being on stage. Let's try to bring these two things together.
What I find so fascinating is, a lot of podcasts do like live podcasts, but that's not what you are doing. Mm-hmm. Like, you created a whole show concept with experiments on stage and a story that runs through each of the shows. Why did you decide on that and not go with live podcasts, or what made you choose this type of science communication, or science show?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, live podcasts are vastly popular. So, and I see the reason people want to see their podcasters, their heroes on stage, and want to maybe have some kind of meet and greet and be there when a podcast is recorded. But I always found it a little bit strange to take one medium and simply throw it onto another platform. For example, I don't see why you should put a podcast on YouTube, because YouTube is something else. And of course, there are a number of examples where people could now say, yeah, but because there are a lot of people listening to podcasts on YouTube, and that's perfectly fine for me, do whatever you like. But it's a little bit strange to use, simply throw a format on another platform, podcast on YouTube or podcast on stage, and simply watch people record a podcast. Nothing is happening there. And so right from the start, and of course, this is easy for us as physicists and guys who know how to do experiments on stage. Right from the start, we said, okay, if we do that, it needs to be a show and not a recording that you can observe. So, we wanted to have, like you said, a whole concept and then live experiments and stuff like that, that kind of is the mixture of a science edutainment and a show, comedy show maybe. And probably this is also the chance to get other people interested in science, because it is a special type of people who are willing to listen to a podcast that lasts 2 hours and is about science. It is fascinating how many people enjoy listening to us, but still there are, of course, people who say, okay, I'm not the type who can listen to people talk for 2 hours. Others cannot watch videos for 2 hours. So this was the chance to do science communication for a different type of audience.
How different is doing or preparing such a science show to, I don't know, giving lectures at a university?
That's really different, because when I enter a show in the evening, a Saturday night somewhere in Munich, a show, there will be a lot of applause when I'm coming to the stage. Monday morning at university at 8 o'clock in the morning, not so much. I see tired eyes. So this is really easy. So doing these shows is really easy, because you're getting so much back from the audience, and it kind of spoils you for giving lectures at the university, because the people are less thankful probably, or are not showing so much that they are thankful for you being there giving a lecture compared to giving a show or being there for a show.
And that kind of already touched on that, but what do you like about bringing science to the stage?
I mean, first of all, of course, it's some kind of a selfish thing, because it's really doing something to you if you are in front of an audience of 500 people who are there to enjoy the evening, enjoy seeing you, being... Yeah, listening to science. This is foremost probably a selfish thing. But I also really enjoy seeing that there are people who are not so close to science coming to our shows. Because the people that are listening to our podcast, they chose the podcast, they listen to it every single week. So they are already really interested in science, but they are quite often, they bring people with them who are not so much into science, friends or family members. And so this is a feedback that we are getting really often, is I was here with my uncle. He has never been much interested in science, but he really enjoyed the evening. And this is something that, yeah, I have to say that I enjoy that we can open or show science, open up science for such an audience is something special, yeah.
So it's a bit coming out of the kind of science tower and not just kind of being in there doing science stuff.
And yeah, that's a really good point. And something that's really also important for us is because when we started this touring thing or doing this show and looked for locations, then the natural choice, and there were a couple of mails asking us to come to universities, speaking in lecture halls. We never really enjoyed that, and we are rarely doing that because exactly what you said, we want to go to the people and not open the doors and say, come to us to the university. We want to be where the people are. So some kind of clubs or concert halls. And this is really important symbol, I would say, to say we go out and explain the science and not we are willing to explain it if you come to us. So that there is a difference. And also that the fact that we explain it in an easy way so that we are not showing them the papers and say, read it, try to understand it, and if you have a question, come back. But we break it down, we make it easy, we make it digestible. So that is something that what people appreciate, that you doing this extra work, coming to them, explaining it in their language with their words. So that's I believe something that that they appreciate, and that's really important to foster trust in science as a method or as an institution.
Yeah, I think it's also one of the points that has been, I feel like, underestimated for quite some time, because it was always like, of course we do science, it will help people, but if people don't understand why whatever scientists do actually has any good outcome for them as well, it's just like, they are doing their science, we're doing our lives. So it's just always a gap in between if you don't connect those two views on how the world might work.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's increasingly important to keep that in mind. So we need a society that is confident that science is doing the right things. So they need to understand how we work and that our methods work. So people don't need to be experts in physics, for example, or in medicine, but they need to know to some extent the scientific method so that they know that they can trust us when we have results and when we communicate the results. This trust in science is something that is, I believe, increasingly important when we look at the challenges that we are facing as a society, let's say climate change or a pandemia that is hitting us, or how should we deal with AI, for example. These are really huge challenges, and we need to know where the facts are coming from, the facts that we can trust, and the facts that we build on the decisions that we make as a society then to deal with these challenges like the climate change. If people start distrusting science, we are in deep trouble, because then they are listening to the false preachers, and that won't probably lead us to solving those challenges.
From the formats that you are doing, have done before, with bringing science communication to the stage, which of these did you feel like were the most successful in reaching people who are not in some way connected to academia?
You mean the formats on stage?
Yeah.
It's a good question. I'm not sure if I would make a ranking there, because they all have a specific target group, and I would say it's all valuable to do that. Let's say the thing that we started with is these lectures for kids at university, for example. I think there is this absolutely beneficial, so or necessary that that we invite kids and teenagers to university and explain what we are doing here and start to fascinate them for science, for example. But also science slams were a great format, or are a great format, you have this 10-minute snippets, and then there is maybe somebody in the audience that says, I never understand physics, I'm not interested in. But after 10 minutes, there is somebody from biology, and then there's somebody from medicine, and probably they are more interested in that. So this is another great format. Our science show is probably a little bit special because people come because of us. So I would say this is very special. You cannot say, I mean, when I'm giving workshops on science communication, I can say to young PhD students, do a science slam. This is a great idea. You train your communication skills and you communicate science. I can hardly say do your own Germany tour with a science show. This is a little bit more complicated. And then again, because you kindly already mentioned it, I'm doing this one-shots, like meeting or teaming up with an orchestra and do a show or a concert where the orchestra is playing music and we communicate science about quantum mechanics, or last time we did was about chaos, I guess. And then again, right, the people are probably not coming for the science. They're coming for the music, but they get a tiny bit of science. And probably they go home and say, that this one fact was really fascinating to hear. So it's really hard to do a ranking there. I would say they all have their positive aspects.
And is there anything you find especially challenging about communicating science on stage?
Stage fright, for example. I was really scared in the beginning to go on stage because it's really, it's really direct communication. You see these faces and the people, the masses. So it's this is challenging, of course. Sometimes it's challenging because such an audience is not really homogeneous, but there are a lot of different people, and of course sometimes we have kids in the audience, but also professors. So where's the middle ground for this audience? This is probably challenging, but maybe the whole process of communicating science on stage is challenging, because it's really there are some skills that you need to have on a stage. I guess you need to be, to some extent, an entertainer, or you need to be able to tell good stories, because an audience can be really critical and they get bored quite easily. So it is a challenge, but a challenge that it's really worth accepting and trying out. If you have the feeling that you would like to try it out, to be on stage and explain your science, do it, because there is so much to learn. Good storytelling, hearing the reaction of the audience, reacting to questions sometimes even, or to comments. It's really amazing. So if you have this feeling that you would love to try it out, look around. There are opportunities to do that. If you are at a university, there are these open days. Try it out. Do a science slam. This is really, there's so much to learn. Do it.
And what is the most interesting thing you learned doing science communication?
So I mean, science communication, our podcast is something that we are really passionate about, because the format of Methodisch Inkorrekt is that Reinhard, the co-host, is reading an article and explaining it to me, and I'm explaining one topic to him. And by that, and we're doing it for 12 years, we are learning news from science by just communicating it. And this is some degree of learning that I never had during my studies, for example. When I studied physics, the focus was physics. So I learned a lot of physics, but this broader picture, what are other fields in science doing right now? What are the great challenges? This is something that I never had the perspective. And the podcast gave it to me, I have to say, because I was looking right and left into the other fields, and my view of science got much broader by that.
So just exploring basically the breadth of science or the research areas that are out there to get to know what is out there, what can be explored, what maybe is the perspective of other fields, on the world.
Yeah, and that is really a humbling feeling, because if you see, first of all, I was in my field, so I know the challenges in my field, and I was looking at my field, and already there it's amazing what people are finding out, and when you're at conferences, you learn about the progress that you are making or your community is making. But then you broaden your view and you see there are this vast number of scientific fields where people are finding out things you never dreamed of or never knew that people know that. And that is so humbling. So, I mean, humbling I'm deeply fascinated how curious human mankind is and what we are finding out in all the fields. And that's bringing us back to this trust thing. When I know how we are working in our fields, when I see how other fields are working, that is what stays with me is the trust, because I see how much time is invested in finding out things. Let's say climate change, the models that are developed there, these are so good in a field that's so complex and so huge to compute. And then is this guy on the internet doing a research, quote unquote, and just stating there is no man-made climate change. This is ridiculous. And this is something that I learned from science communication, how much there is that we already found out as humans.
All right, let's maybe slowly come to an end. Before we wrap things up, is there any other science communication format or a specific communicator our listeners should definitely check out? Anything you want to promote here?
If we stay with the formats, I would really encourage that people go to some kind of live stage event of science, like science slams, for example. But probably all of your listeners have been to science slams, but also these. Yeah, science shows. There is not only our show, but there are other people doing that. This is a growing field, I guess. And this is really something that you can do together, even with people that are not so much in science. Go there and have a great evening with science. See, I don't know, experiments or fascinating facts. I think that this is something that will be more and more important in the future, and really a good thing for a date or for a nice evening to listen to science.
Yeah. Cool endorsement. Yeah. I think at least for me, going to science shows is not something I have on my radar. Like I'm sometimes looking for concert tickets. I've been to the Methodisch Inkorrekt shows, but outside of that, I think not a lot of people have that on their radar, that is something you can do in an evening. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And with that, I would say thank you so much for joining us for this interview. And where can people find you?
everywhere.
On the internet. Probably listen to the podcast, Methodisch Inkorrekt. As we said, disclaimer, it's in German. I have an Instagram that I... There are some science things on it, but also like private stuff, because I think it's important to always show the people behind the science. This is also important. So Instagram probably, that's it.
Maybe also one of your shows if they're in Germany. So
be our guest. Yeah, that would be great, of course.
Okay, so with that said, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
This was Kaleido Science. We hope that you enjoyed this episode and we would love to have your feedback. You can rate our podcast and give us feedback on our Instagram account. Have a great week and you'll hear from us again in 2 weeks. This episode was hosted by Imogen Hüsing and Elisa Palme. Produced by Imogen Hüsing, Clara Kühne, Sophie Kühne, Sönke Lülf and Elisa Palme. The music is from Jan-Luca Schröder and the logo is from Annika Richter.